I welcome you back to another week in our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We're looking at the building of Solomon's temple at the present time. Remember that this temple was designed by David with the aid of the Holy Spirit, but is now being made a reality after David's death, during the first portion of King Solomon's solo reign. And so the temple itself, the construction project, began in the 480th year of the Exodus, and that would be, I think, about 977 BC. And it was quickly followed then by a sabbatical year and a jubilee year, so 2 years off in a row that no work would have been done on it. And then they would have come back after those 2 years off and pushed it to its completion by the time we get to the 11th year of Solomon, which I believe would have been 971 BC. And then they do all of the final tweaks to the building and bring everything inside and get ready for the dedication ceremony that happens the following year in the 12th year of Solomon, 970 BC. Now, we've been looking at the dimensions, and I've told you that because of this one little portion of a verse in 2 Chronicles, that I believe we should be using the long cubit. That is the royal Egyptian cubit, which is 20.7 inches in length. So the building, the shrine building, just the main building itself that we're talking about, is 60 cubits long. That's 103.5 feet. It's 30 cubits tall. That would be 57.75 feet tall. And it's 20 cubits wide, and that's 34.5 feet wide. So that's the basic building itself, and it's built of apparently pretty massive blocks of stone. And the dimensions that I just gave you would have been the interior dimensions. And so it would have been even larger on the outside, depending on how large these blocks of stone were. Now, the roof of it is a little bit hard to pin down. It may have had just a cypress roof over the top of it. But I think it's also possible that they would have come up with some sort of framing mechanism where they could support large blocks of stone across the top so that from the outside the finished work would have looked like a block of stones, this large block, rectangular block of stones. Regardless of that, today we're going to start talking about some of the interior work. Now, keep in mind one other thing before we move forward, and that is that around the three sides of the main shrine building, that is the sides where there was no entry point, there was a wraparound storage annex that could only be accessed from the outside of the storage access. There was no means of getting into it from the inside of the shrine building. This storage access, or this storage annex, was built separate from the main building. None of the support features for this three-story annex pierced into the stonework of the shrine building itself. And this went up, probably with the ceilings involved, about halfway up the side of the shrine building, and it would have been designed in such a way to look complementary to the building as a whole. Now, in front of the shrine building, we've also found out that there was this large tower that shot up to, let's see, it's 120 cubits from the entry level, the floor level that you went into the front of the shrine building, up to the top of this tower. And so that would be, let's see, in feet, that's 207 feet. That's an amazing height for this time period. So just the overall look of this building would have been quite impressive from the outside. Now we're ready to go back and remind ourselves of where we broke off on Friday with the interior of this building, the shrine building itself. So I want to start in 1 Kings chapter 6, verse number 14, if you would. So Solomon built the house and finished it. So house is just another word for temple. Temple is just a fancy word for palace, a palace for God. He lined the walls of the house on the inside with boards of cedar. From the floor of the house to the walls of the ceiling, he covered them on the inside with wood, and he covered the floor of the wood of the house with boards of cypress. So there is none of the block structure showing on the inside of the shrine building. It has all been floored and paneled, including the ceiling itself, if it was some sort of block overlay at the top. So the entire interior is overlaid with very fragrant, fine-grained wood, which has probably been sanded to a nice, smooth finish. Verse number 16. He built 20 cubits on the rear of the house with boards of cedar from the floor to the walls, and he built them within as an inner sanctuary, as the most holy place. So effectively, he builds a building inside the back of this shrine building. This building is all made of wood, cedar wood, and it is a perfect cube as its interior dimensions. It's 20 cubits by 20 cubits by 20 cubits, so that would be 34.5 feet. It's the width that we saw for the interior dimension of the shrine building. This is where the throne room of God is going to be located. It is the most holy place, or as the older version of the English Bible say, it is the Holy of Holies. It's where the Ark of the Covenant will be positioned as God's throne. Verse 17, the house, that is the nave in front of the inner sanctuary, was 40 cubits long. So that's the holy place. That's where the priests will be doing their daily work, in front of this little shrine building, inside the shrine building. The cedar within the house was carved in the form of gourds and open flowers. All was cedar, no stone was seen, just exactly as I was saying earlier. It's all paneled on the inside. The inner sanctuary he prepared in the innermost part of the house to set there the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is. And then we have the dimensions mentioned again. The inner sanctuary was 20 cubits long, 20 cubits wide, 20 cubits high, and he overlaid it with pure gold, and he also overlaid an altar of cedar. Now, that altar of cedar, not exactly sure what that's a reference to. It perhaps might refer to some sort of dais or raised platform at the center of this Holy of Holies that the Ark of the Covenant will be placed upon. Because again, remember, the Ark of the Covenant represents the earthly throne of God. It's not a decorated storage box. It's an earthly throne, a sedan chair that happens to have storage inside the seat of this chair, this throne. So this might refer to then a raised platform at the center of this special room. Now listen to this again, verse 21. Solomon overlaid the inside of the house with pure gold. So all of these paneled walls that he's put up, they're going to be carved, either a recessed carving or a raised carving, with all sorts of natural and supernatural imagery. But that is then overlaid with a layer of gold. Now, how they did this, I don't know. It's probably a special procedure that they'd perfected. It might be a sort of gold paint. Maybe they had it nice and hot and slathered it on and smoothed it out. Excuse me. But my guess is that after it has dried or after it has cooled down and solidified, that there would then be a polishing that went on so that the walls have a mirror finish. And that's particularly interesting to me in that the cube of the most holy place, the Holy of Holies, where the Ark of God is going to be located, is going to be like the inside of a mirrored box, reflecting in all sorts of directions the Ark of the Covenant and the decorative cherubim that we haven't talked about yet that are in the room. And it'll be like one of those infinity mirrors that you may have experienced typically when you go to like a fun house or something where they've got mirrors across from each other and they're reflecting reflections, reflecting all over the place. And it's like everything is going off into eternity. And I think that might have been intentional in the design to give an awesome appearance to the Holy of Holies as the high priest would go in once a year. Because people out in the most holy place, the priests that would have been out there, could have observed as the high priest went in one day a year, every year, Yom Kippur, into this very special room and would have been awed by such a visionary appearance of a mirrored cube. Because even the floor was coated in gold and probably brought up to a nice high polish shine. So he drew chains of gold across in front of the inner sanctuary and overlaid it with gold. Now, this chain or these chains are probably the attachment mechanism for a veil that hangs down in front of the Holy of Holies. Now, there will be doors that we will talk about in a little bit that provide access into the Holy of Holies. But there's also evidently this special veil that hangs down in front of it. We know this veil much better in the New Testament because it's the veil that was torn by God from top to bottom at the moment of Jesus' death, signifying that the barrier of sin guilt had been pierced, had been torn away by the atoning death of Jesus Christ, and that no longer would saved individuals be barred from the presence of God because they'd been covered by the blood of the Messiah. Okay, back to verse 22 now. He overlaid the whole house with gold until all the house was finished, and also the whole altar that belonged to the inner sanctuary, he overlaid with gold. And again, I think that might be a raised platform at the center of the floor area in the Holy of Holies, or the most holy place. Now, let's talk about the specific decoration of the most holy place. Verse 23, in the inner sanctuary, he made two cherubim of olive wood, each 10 cubits high. So these are the four-faced, four-winged angelic creatures. They're real. They're not mythological. And we have them described in great detail in the book of Ezekiel, when Ezekiel talks about his own visions of the real Holy of Holies, the throne room of God in the eternal dimension. So here are two of these angelic creatures, half the height of the most holy place in which they are standing. Now, they are massive just by themselves. They are 17 and a quarter feet tall, 10 cubits tall. So it's one of those weird things that even though these two cherubim would have towered over the Ark of the Covenant, the ceiling of the most holy place would have still been twice their height above them. And so this would have given, again, this awesome appearance of the most holy place as the high priest went into it year by year. Now, 5 cubits was the length of one wing of the cherub. 5 cubits was the length of the other wing of the cherub. So that's 8.5 feet, 8.625 feet. And so with the width of the body of the cherubim, what happens here is the wings of these two cherubim stretch from wall to wall, because the one cherub, the wing touches the wall on one side, and then the other wing touches the center of the room where the wing of the next cherubim starts, and then that goes across the body of the cherub off to the other side of the wall. And since these cherubim actually have 4 wings, it's possible that you might have had a similar effect the other direction, where you've got wings touching the front wall and wings touching the back wall. And this is up above the floor and also where the Ark of the Covenant is located, exactly underneath the touching point of the two center wings of these cherubim. All right, so again, verse 25, 5 cubits was the length of one wing of the cherub, 5 cubits the length of the other wing of the cherub. It was 10 cubits from tip of one wing to the tip of the other. The other cherub also measured 10 cubits. Both cherubim had the same measure, the same form. The height of one cherub was 10 cubits, and so was the other cherub. And he put the cherubim in the innermost part of the house, and the wings of the cherubim were spread out so that a wing of one touched the one wall, and a wing of the other cherub touched the other wall. Their other wings touched each other in the middle of the house. And he overlaid the cherubim with gold. So they were made of olive wood, and as large as they are, it's possible. I'm not saying this is guaranteed, but it is possible that their main body may have been made out of the single trunk of an olive tree. And then they would have had other bits of olive trees that were made into the wings that were attached. So this would have been an amazing thing. And then they overlaid it with gold, possibly, based on some other passages that we've been looking at, they might have inlaid these cherubim with precious stones as well. Because when we see the cherubim described by Ezekiel, their wings have eyes, which seems to be a reference to the eyes like you see in peacock plumage. And so there may have been all of this jewelry added to the wings and the bodies of these gold-plated, olive wood, almost 18 feet high cherubim that were standing here in the Holy of Holies. And that's just going to add to the magnificence of this throne room of God. Verse number 29. Around all the walls of the house, he carved engraved figures of cherubim and palm trees and open flowers in the inner and the outer rooms. And the floor of the house he overlaid with gold in the inner and outer rooms. So again, we've got this paneling that's been carved, either recessed or maybe it's been brought up as kind of a boss where it's the part is coming out at you. And that's been also overlaid with gold and perhaps even decorated with jewels. And just an amazing thing all the way around. I keep telling you that this is the most expensive per cubic foot building ever built in the history of the world. We know that David had collected several trillions of dollars worth of materials to be used in the construction of this building, this complex. And the artistry that is put into place by the professionals that are bringing all this to its fruition would have added even more value because of their abilities. And if it hadn't been destroyed completely and absolutely in 587 BC, it should have made the list of the seven ancient wonders of the world, the seven wonders of the ancient world. But it had already been destroyed, I think, by the time that list was recommended by an ancient writer. All right, verse number 31. For the entrance to the inner sanctuary, he made doors of olive wood. The lintel and the doorposts were five-sided. And he covered the two doors of olive wood with carvings of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. And he overlaid them with gold and spread gold on the cherubim and on the palm trees. So even the doors that go into the Holy of Holies from the most holy place, made of olive wood, massive probably, they're carved up like the walls and overlaid in gold, very highly decorative. Verse 33, so also he made for the entrance of the nave doorposts of olive wood in the form of a square, and the two doors of cypress wood. The two leaves of the one door were folding, and the two leaves of the other door were folding. Now, if you think about like some closet doors that you've seen where they've got that bifold arrangement, that seems to be the way that these doors work. And they may have had some sort of system by which they would slide and fold properly. Now, remember, the people that are doing all this are Phoenicians or have background in Phoenician technology. And the Phoenicians were master builders of ships and massive buildings. Verse 35, on them he carved cherubim and palm trees and open flowers, overlaid them with gold, evenly applied on the carved work. So, very much like the walls, lots of carving, lots of overlay. The carving includes representatives or representations of more cherubim, since this is a 2D representation, kind of. It's been raised or carved in, but it's really kind of showing a more flat approach. Probably only two of the faces and two of the wings would be shown on each of the cherubim. And that's actually how it's described in the book of Ezekiel, when Ezekiel is describing a building of a temple that should have happened after the Israelis came back from their Babylonian exile. Verse 36, now we move outside. He built the inner court with three courses of cut stone and one course of cedar beams. The temple structure that we've just described with the main building, the main shrine building, the wraparound annex for storage, and the great big tower on the front end of it, that is then surrounded by a court, a place where work goes on by the priests, a place where the worshipers can meet with the priests and offer sacrifices and devote offerings to God. Around that court, and we don't know how big that court was, there was some sort of structure that defined the inner court where all of that worship and all of that priestly duty happened. There would have been gates that went through this wall into the inner court. This wall is described as being made of three courses. That means three levels of cut stone. Now, we don't know how big these stones are, but even if they're, say, one cubit high, that's going to be three cubits tall just for the stones, and that's at least a little over 5 feet. And that would be a good enough barrier to make people have to go through the access points, the gates. But on top of that, there was some sort of course of cedar beams, so some sort of decorative cap to this wall. Now, Josephus, who never saw Solomon's temple, understand that. It was long gone. It had been centuries previous to Josephus. But traditions had gotten down to him that on the east side, perhaps built as part of the eastern wall of this structure that we're talking about here, there was a portico, that is, some sort of covered walkway or covered meeting area that allowed people to get in and out of the sun and out of the elements during their times of worship at the temple. And that colonnade on the eastern side seems to be the precursor of Solomon's portico, which we know existed in the time of Herod's temple and the very place where the church met at the beginning of its history. Well, we're out of time, so come back tomorrow and we'll continue describing the Temple of Solomon.